The views and discussion expressed on this program do not necessarily represent those of the hosts of the program, WMKV, Maple Knoll Communities, WLHS, the Lakota Local School District, or staff and management. The information and advice presented are educational in nature and not intended to be taken as specific legal, accounting, or other professional advice. Always consult with your own legal, accounting, or other professional before making any investment. Welcome to Real Life Real Estate Investing, a show to help you gain financial freedom by investing in real estate. Brought to you by the Real Estate Investors Association of Cincinnati and the Ohio Real Estate Investors Association. You're listening to Real Life Real Estate Investing on WMKV, WLHS, and the Maple Knoll Radio Network. And now your host, Vina Jones-Cox.
Good afternoon. I am Vina Jones-Cox, and this is Real Life Real Estate Investing, where this week, like every week, we're working our fingers to the bone to get you the information and inspiration you need to start or grow your own real estate investing business. All right, what's going on in the real estate world right now? Next Wednesday, May the 28th, the Ohio Real Estate Investors Association is having its Real Estate Investor Day at the Capitol in Columbus, Ohio. It's a meet and greet, and there's reception, food, and whatnot at the State House starting at 2:30 in the afternoon on Wednesday and wrapping up at 6:30. Anyone who is a real estate investor and would like to talk to legislators about the things like the water bill that's being considered right now that would bring Ohio into sync with other states where when tenants move into a house and agree to pay the water, they're actually held responsible for the water, not the owner of the house, which is the way it is in Ohio right now. Talking to them about the Airbnb bill that would disallow localities from making unreasonable rules about short-term rentals, about the anti-squatter bill, where at the moment people can move into your house, like break in and move in, and if you call the police and say there's trespassers in my house, they say it's a civil case and you have to evict people who are doing God knows what to your house because you don't even know who they are. All of those laws are being considered right now, and legislators need to hear from real-life real estate investors about that. So if you're interested in attending OREA Day at the Capitol, which would be amazing because you can't, like, we need a big showing and you can't expect everybody else to come and you don't come, you can get more information about it at OREA.com. That's OREIA.com. There's a small fee just to kind of cover the food and the expenses, and you'll get to meet lots of other real estate investors from all over the state, and it would be great if you could go. OREA.com. Today, we are talking about a topic that's it's a little weird that as much as real estate investors deal with banks in the sense of, like, we want to borrow their money, how little we understand about the inside workings of banks and why they want to loan money and what kind of banks are most friendly to real estate investors and just a whole ton of other things. And today we are going to talk to professional borrower Robert Mohan, who was on the line a minute ago, and when Mike went and switched over, we got a fast, busy signal. But Robert's awesome. He's borrowed millions and millions of dollars from banks. In fact, he has built his entire real estate portfolio simply by going to banks and getting loans that many of us don't even know exist because we just go to the bank and fill out the regular application and wait to hear if we got accepted or not. So joining us from his hotel in Germany, where I'm pretty sure it is costing him about $10 a minute to talk to us. So everybody should take a lot of advantage of what he has to say and ask a lot of questions, is Mr. Robert Mohan. Robert, welcome to Real Life Real Estate. Robert, can you hear me? I feel like maybe Robert can't hear me. So while we work out the international phone issues that we're having here, another thing that's coming up real soon here is the Summit Help Night. We hold that once a month. It is online on the fourth Wednesday of every month, which makes it also next Wednesday, but this one is on Zoom. This is not a meeting with like a lecture and a speaker and, you know, some kind of prepared content. It is a help night. So what we try to do is bring together people who know about whatever the month's topic is and people who want to know about whatever the month's topic is. And it's kind of like, you know, help me with my deals, Q&A. This month's topic is rural and small town investing. It is rural and small town investing help night. That's a very popular topic at the moment, I think partly because the competition in the cities and also the regulation in the cities has gotten overwhelming for a lot of real estate investors. And they're kind of looking out to the next county over where there's more land and more farms and more mobile homes and still lots of people who want to rent and buy them. But it is definitely different. It is definitely different. Like, you know, think about, how do you let people know that you have a wholesale deal in a rural county? Because there's not going to be a real estate investors association in that little county. So we're going to talk with the folks who do that all the time are going to talk about how to borrow money in those little counties, how to find deals in those little counties, all of that sort of stuff. You can register for the free Summit Help Night at CincinnatiRIA.com. That's CincinnatiRIA.com. So hopefully we have Robert back. Robert, can you hear me?
Hello.
Oh, there you are.
I can hear you.
Yeah. That's never scary on live radio to be tap
Not
dancing
at
and
all.
Thinking that you might be doing that for the next hour. So welcome. Thank you for calling us from Europe. We appreciate your dedication to this idea that people ought to, you know, learn more about banks and then go borrow money from them. And I think I want to just start out with kind of disambiguating, like, people sometimes think that they are applying for a bank loan because they are, you know, they're told your lender is going to be Huntington or Bank of America or whatever, and they don't realize that what they're really dealing with is a broker. Can we just start with some definitions? Like, what's the difference between I'm borrowing from a bank and I have a mortgage broker?
Oh, that's a great question. The bank has the money. The mortgage broker is brokering the money from a bank. Now, some feel like the advantage of a broker, and it's true, is the broker has multiple banks they work with. However, why do you need to pay that middleman to do something you can do yourself? Why not go directly to the bank? Mm-hmm. And a lot of times people just don't think about it. They don't know they can, or lack of confidence. It could be any number of reasons, but you can do it.
I'm not even sure they always realize they're working with a broker, honestly, because I did that one time. I had a guy who came to one of our RIA meetings, and he said, hey, such and such a bank is offering these great loans right now for real estate investors. And so I was like, great, I'll go apply for one. And I didn't find out until three quarters of the way through the process that he didn't actually work for the bank. Well, I mean, he worked for the bank in the sense that he was brokering for them and a lot of other banks. But I didn't realize I wasn't talking straight to the banker when I asked questions and made applications and so on. And of course, it did raise my costs a little bit because brokers have to get paid. They deserve to get paid for what they do. But
absolutely.
You usually end up
and there are fees and costs involved in that.
Yeah, right. You end up paying another point or two on the loan. So the other thing that we've This is something that we've only heard a lot about for maybe the last 10 years, is DSCR loans. This idea that there's this whole other way to get loans where the costs are typically higher, but the hoops to jump through are typically lower. Also, not banks.
Exactly. Also not banks. So whenever you have somebody else in the middle, they're allowed to set their own fees. They're allowed to set their own terms. They're allowed to, wait a minute, maybe it's not even bank money. Maybe it's a big hedge fund's money, and they are following the rules of a hedge fund. And that could be great if that works for you, if the fees and the opportunity to borrow that money is great. But they can also turn off the spigot with little or no notice. And that can really put you in a hardship situation if you're going down the road of one of these loans and all of a sudden you find out your money spigot is gone.
So one final kind of definitional thing before we dive into this idea of, like, what do we not know about banks that we should know? There are banks that make what are called conventional loans, which are loans that they're going to sell to either Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac or some of the smaller banks, sell to other organizations. And then there are banks that make portfolio loans. What's the deal with portfolio loans?
Portfolio loans are great because that lender is going to keep that loan on their books, which means they can set the rules. So just like I alluded to with the hedge funds, it's their money. They're going to service the loan. They're probably going to keep that loan on their books. So they have a vested interest in making sure it's a good loan, which gives you some protection too, so you're not borrowing and doing a bad deal. And it's more personal. It's more relationship building. It's just a better experience. And I've found, once you do the first one, then the second, the third, the fourth, they go so much easier once that initial relationship is built. I like to think that the loan you do today is to help you get an even better loan tomorrow. I mean, I mean, literally tomorrow, maybe 6 months, a year, 30 days from now. But once you get that initial loan with that lender, the next one's easier because they already know who you are. You've now been performing. You're a trusted person. They know you're there to do good business. And that's really what they want.
I'm writing that down. The loan you do today is for the loan you get tomorrow. Because the key thing in my brain about portfolio lenders is they don't have to fit you and your deal into that box that is what Fannie Mae will buy.
That's right.
They don't,
that's right.
They don't. They
and
don't, they
and
don't.
As their, well, as their rules change, they can loosen things up because now you're part of the family. You're a trusted customer. Mm-hmm. You're a customer that's already part of the family, and that makes a big difference.
I've heard lots of stories from lots of people, particularly over the last few weeks, about, I have this bank, and not that they own it, but I have this bank that I have been working with for many years that now, like, when I make a loan application, I don't even have to make a loan application if it's in the same year. They've already got it. I just say, here's how much I'm looking to borrow. They start their appraisal process. I don't even have to go through all the paperwork again. And people saying things like, well, they kind of made a special program for me because I do so much business with them, and now I can do 10-year fixed where they're offering everybody else 5-year fixed. So portfolio lenders, ladies and gentlemen, that is what the term you need to keep in mind, because that's who we're talking about the inside secrets of today. We're going to take a quick break. We're also going to take any question you might have about working with banks to get money. The phone number, if you'd like to call in the question, is 877-772-9658. Again, 877-772-9658. Or you can send it by email to vinaradio@gmail.com. Welcome back to Real Life Real Estate Investing. I'm your host, Vina Jones Cox. My guest today is Robert Mohan, who calls himself a professional borrower. He says he's a professional borrower because he's just gotten so good at borrowing money from banks, and sometimes money that you and I don't really know about because we haven't built the relationships with banks that he has built. So, Robert, let's talk about that. What kind of bank am I looking for if I really want a relationship where they know me and I know them?
The short answer is a small local bank. Now, I hear a lot of folks complain, oh, every time I go in the bank, it's somebody different working there. Well, number one, that's clear you're not necessarily talking to the right people in the right part of the bank, and your bank might be too big, because these types of banks that do these good loans for us, the staff doesn't change. They stay for years. And even if they do change, they go across town to another small local bank. They don't leave the industry. They stay in the industry. So once they get to know you, again, you're part of the family. They know you do good business, and that's what they want. And that's what they're incentivized on, is to bring more good loans to the bank. And you provide those. And professional borrower sounds better than debtor. So,
it does.
It's like you said, I've learned, I've asked the questions, I've spent the time with them and said, how does this really work? What do you really want to see? What are the secrets that, and maybe they're not secret, it's just the unknowns. What do you wish borrowers or applicants would know? And then I shut up and listen and I've taken notes, and I'm going to be sharing those ideas when we meet in person here in a couple of weeks.
You are, yes. So one of the first questions that I always hear after I say, well, that one's probably going to have to go to a portfolio lender. Like, you've got a weird deal, right? Because portfolio lenders are kind of famous for, they will consider weird deals, especially if they're in their own backyard, that Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, DSCR lenders, they don't want them. You know, stuff like properties where there are two houses on one lot. Those are basically impossible to finance anyway other than with a small local lender. Properties that are like a four family with a storefront on the bottom. Like, they don't fit in the commercial world and they don't fit in the residential world. So, like, I always tell people, go to a small local bank. And the next thing they say is, how do I find a small local bank?
So how do you find a small local bank? Well, of course, you could Google that and see what you get. But then I would suggest you do a little bit deeper search. Maybe count how many branches they have. And if it's a whole lot of branches, then, well, maybe that's just too big. Why not start with a small one that's one or two or three branches? And I use the term local, but I didn't say it had to be local to you. It may be local in some nearby town or even a nearby state. If you're in the tri-state area, it could be just over the river or over the state line. Maybe they're looking to loan in the area where you're looking to invest.
Mm-hmm.
Why not ask them, hey, do you make, for example, rental house property loans to people over in my area, you know, Price Hill, let's say, or Blue Ash, or Aurora, just over in Indiana, wherever you like to invest. Ask. You can't read people's minds, or if you can, you're better than I am. You got to ask. And even if you ask a year ago, things may have changed. Go ask again. An answer today doesn't mean that's going to be the same answer down the road.
That's a very interesting statement, because with conventional loans, it kind of is the same answer year after year after year, because there's that box that you and your property have to fit into. Why would things change for a little local bank?
Well, they could have gotten new board members that had different ideas. They could have had several loans of your type pay off, and now they need to refill that bucket, as they say. It could be that they have some Community Reinvestment Act, CRA money, that they have to get deployed, and your deal happens to be qualified for that. Maybe they've had an adjustment in their bank charter. Maybe it's a newer bank, and maybe that's part of their bank charter. So he who doesn't ask doesn't get. mm-hmm. ask the question.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. We're going to come back to that CRA thing because that is super important. But the one time several years ago, you told me that there was a way to find banks that had some particular amount of assets that would indicate that they probably fell into this small local bank category.
Like, we want to tell secrets here on the public radio? Well, do you think they actually want to hear them?
I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe they'd rather just keep Googling until they can find the small local
Well,
bank.
Yeah, maybe it's on a TikTok. Or maybe we'll just tell them so Mike doesn't have to do the traffic for a couple more minutes. $10 billion, and that's billion with a B. Look for banks that are $10 billion in assets and less. That's a really easy starting place.
Well, how am I going to find out how many assets the bank has?
Well, you can ask them. It's probably on their website. You could probably also go to another website. It's only secret because you don't yet know it, but I'll tell it now. BauerFinancial.com has
B-A-U-E-R
all the banks.
B-O-W-E-R.
B-A-U-E-R, Bauer Financial. Bauer provides not only how large they are, the number of assets, but they also show how stable they are. They show financial statements and other things that may not be very interesting to you. Unless you're looking for a bank to deposit money, then that could be very interesting. But at the moment, you're looking at what's their total asset base, mm-hmm. $10 billion or less.
Mm-hmm. So these little banks, you mentioned a board. You mentioned they could have changed their charter. They could have had new board members. So is what we're picturing here sort of like the bank that what's his name ran in that Christmas movie? It's a Wonderful Life. Because that's kind of how they operated, right? They had a family board and a couple of other people, and they would make decisions about we're going to give Martini a loan. And literally, that guy's name was Martini. Mike Martini. I just made that connection because he's a good dude and he works really hard, right? And that's sort of kind of how it works at these small banks still.
Well, they definitely consider your reputation in the community. That is one of the things. Now, it's not, are they my best friend or that sort of thing. They do have standards they have to adhere to. But their mandate and their desire is to build the community that they're in because they are residents of the community as well. And the best business to do if you're a community bank is in your community. And they have to do different kinds of business. So they may do used car loans. They may do personal property residences or home equity lines of credit, business loans, unsecured lines of credit, and maybe real estate loans you're looking to get done. It's a great place to go meet your local people who really want to build up the community.
And who you can talk to closely enough to get them excited about your project. Like that's a big deal because I can't walk into one of the giant national banks and say, hey, I've got this vision that I'm going to take this whole block of our community and I'm going to revitalize it and I'm going to put a coffee place here and I'm going to you can say that to one of the giant national banks, but they're not going to get excited about it the way the little local bank might get excited about it.
That's right. And the little local bank may already be aware of your prior history in the community. They may know your background and your experience. You go into the bigger bank, they're trained to do certain things, and it's not to necessarily know who you are in the community when it comes to a prospective loan. Whereas your smaller banks, they're going to be in the chamber. They're going to be taking the business journal. They're going to be in other community groups. They might be in your networking or leads groups or maybe a Toastmasters group. They will be in the community because they are supposed to be in the community to have their ear to the ground and hear what's going on. Mm-hmm. They'll know what the scuttlebutt is in the market. And they're a great source of information on how the market is doing. So even if you're not ready for a loan today, getting to know a banker to find out marketing intel is just smart.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You said the letters CRA, and I think that went over a lot of people's heads, but it is one of the major reasons that portfolio lenders will make loans on properties in kind of the areas where there aren't a lot of people investing in properties, like your C-class areas, your properties that have been maybe vacant for a while in a distressed neighborhood. Can you talk about what CRA even means and how that has maybe affected you in your borrowing?
Well, Community Reinvestment Act is what it stands for. It's reinvesting in the community. Some years ago, banks got called on the carpet, maybe, for practices where they would only loan to certain types of property, certain types of deals, certain types of people. And Congress said, listen, we need to fix this. And they did with Community Reinvestment Act. And so that says there's a certain amount of your loans you need to do that do certain things. Some people may remember opportunity zones. There were rules set up, sort of a box, if you will. And if your deal fit inside that opportunity zone box, you got the opportunity zone benefit. So it's very much the same as that. But each bank has a certain amount that they've already used up or finished of their requirements. And you don't know how far along they are. You don't even know if your property is in that CRA zone. Go ask. Mm-hmm. So you need to find, in order to use the CRA benefits, you need to find out, is your property in that area? And then, is that particular lender open to funding it as a CRA-type loan because they've got space and they need to do it? And they're very favorable. And frankly, you make the bank look good to their regulators and the people that oversee them. They love that.
They're
so why not take advantage of it?
They're literally required to invest a certain amount of money in these formerly redlined areas. So I have found that portfolio lenders get very excited when I come to them and I say, hey, I'm pretty sure this is in a CRA area. Would you like to finance it? Because, yeah, they always, I mean, around here, they always seem to need more of those. We've got a couple of questions coming in now from listeners. And so I think what I'd like to do is take a break so that we can then like clean all of these up in one fell swoop. You're listening to Real Life Real Estate Investing, talking today to Robert Mohan about inside secrets of banks that might get you more or better money than you're used to getting. You can give us a call at 877-772-9658, or you can send an email to vinaradio@gmail.com. Welcome back to Real Life Real Estate Investing. I'm your host, Vina Jones Cox. My guest today is Robert Mohan, professional borrower. And if you're in Ohio 2 weeks from now, Robert, when he gets back from Germany, is going to be making a tour of the Cincinnati and Columbus real estate investor meetings. And he's going to have an hour and a half all to himself without anybody interrupting him on the topic of how to get banks begging you to borrow their money. Lots of examples, lots more information. If you want to come to the Cincinnati meeting on Thursday, I'm going to be about to get this date wrong, Thursday, June 5th, yes. You can sign up for that at cincinnatirea.com. If you want to come to Columbus on Tuesday, June the 3rd, that is at coreerocks.com. That's coreerocks.com. All right, so let's hit some listener questions, Robert. Joel from our buddy's Acre in Pittsburgh says, other than depositors, where do small local banks get their loan funding from?
That's a good question. Well, sometimes it can be initial paid-in capital startup money. They can also borrow from other banks. They can also borrow from the Fed. that's very easy for them to get money. Their cheapest source of money is you and I, the depositors. They will pay us, let's say, 1% on our deposit, then turn around and loan it back to us at, say, 7%. Wow. There's a big spread there.
That's a good business model.
And if you ever pay attention to publicly traded banks, that number is called their net interest margin. And they tend to target around 3 or 3.5%. Well, I don't know why I'm getting 1% and they're charging 6% when they loan it out. That's 5%. Well, take the total loans that they do. So banks love it when we will deposit money. And, of course, they're allowed to multiply our deposits and loan out even more than we deposit.
Mm-hmm.
But that's another conversation for our in-person meetings.
Okay, I have a question here from JC in Las Vegas. Will a bank tell me if I'm likely to become the sort of customer they want? If I ask them, will they describe their best customers? And will they describe who their best customers typically are to me and how they became good customers if I ask?
I don't see why they wouldn't. Now, they won't give specific examples because of privacy reasons, but I think you could ask that question maybe a little bit differently to say, can you give me an example of some real estate investors you know, or whatever type of loan you want. Maybe you want a loan on a bowling alley business or maybe a short-term rental business.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them I've ever met will be very forthcoming and tell you exactly what made for a good customer. And the answer is probably going to be they provided all the documentation we asked for. They paid us when they said. They paid us agreed. And we just didn't have any grief out of them. They had a really good reputation. They did good business, and the community loved them. We heard no complaints anywhere. Or if we did, they took care of it. You know, there's no way to just never have zero complaints in some businesses.
Yeah.
But I think absolutely that's a question worth asking. That's a very good idea.
Okay, a question from Russell, who is, you know Russell, you've met him at the National Summit. He says, thank you for being on. I'm interested in knowing, you're going to love this. He says, I'm interested in knowing how a newer professional borrower may start to build a reputation in a community, and any tips on developing relationships with the lenders of these local banks.
Go in and start talking to them. Go in and begin to build a relationship. Find out, do they loan on the types of deals you want to do? And if they don't, keep record of it, politely thank them, and move on to the next one. Because in your marketplace, there have got to be at least 24 lenders who want a loan on your type of deal. Go find another one. There are over 4,000 banks in this country. Surely you can find 2 or 3 or 4 of them who will loan on your type of deal. You just need to open your mouth and ask. And don't read minds. I've tried that. It doesn't work. In fact, in our house, we make the joke, my mind reading course has still not shown up. I've contacted UPS and asked them where it is, and they said, we'll keep looking, but we haven't found it. Because it doesn't work. Just go open your mouth and ask.
That's interesting. You're way chiller about that with the bankers than I am, because when I have gone in, and it's usually, to be clear, I haven't usually gone in when I needed a loan. I have gone in to have an exploratory conversation about what sorts of loans do they make. And they say, well, we don't make loans on that kind of property. I say, why? Like, what do you not like about that kind of property? And then I try and talk them into making loans on that kind of property, because sometimes I can be persuasive about, no, you've got it all wrong. They're really safe for this reason, and they're really good for the community for this reason. And sometimes I get them, they'll say, well, you know what? I'll go talk to the board about that. Because this is not like working with the giant banks.
Yeah, they're real people that make these decisions. Now, some folks are comfortable with trying to pitch their deal. I know for me, I've realized that that person I'm sitting across from, if I'm sitting in front of the right person at the bank, is my best salesman for my deal. Because that bank officer is compensated. I'm not necessarily saying gets a big fat commission, but they are compensated to go and get new loans that are good, that pay on time, and that perform as agreed. So they understand your deal, or if they understand your deal, then they can sell it to their committee, their board, whoever they have to go to get it approved. You want them, and that, believe me, they want to be on your side, but you need to make sure your opportunity is packaged well enough for them to understand it, so they can then in turn, in those boardrooms or in those back rooms at the bank, and sometimes it's 7 a.m., they'll come in and have these committee meetings. I've recently heard, actually, one bank in my town does this. They come in at 7 a.m. on Thursday and review anything that's come in and approve or deny. These are just real people, just like us.
Mm-hmm. Now, the other
part... Go ask the question.
The other part of his question was, you mentioned that the bank, these little banks are kind of connected with, like, what's going on in the community and who has a good reputation and who doesn't. And the other part of his question was, well, I'm new. Like, how do I become one of the people that they, in their heads, are doing good things in the community when I haven't really done anything yet?
Well, you could find community organizations that, say, your target banker is in, and get to know them through that organization. Rotary, Lions, I mentioned Toastmasters earlier. Maybe there's a church organization or some other civic group that gathers. That's one way to do that. Volunteer. If you know there's one of those banker types in your real estate investor group, get to know them through that. Be visible. The volunteering is a, I won't say it's mandated, but a lot of the local community banks really encourage their decision makers and their lender officers to go out and be involved in the community in a volunteer capacity. That's also how they hear stuff. They're out and about. You need to be out and about.
Mm-hmm.
Get to know them through that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, question from Kim. She says, can you give me some specific questions that I would ask one of these loan officers about the business that they want to do?
I'll start simply and say, do you like rental real estate where I don't live in it? Now, they call that non-owner-occupied loans, but we don't have to use jargon here lest we have to throw the jargon flag. Ask them, do you like single-family homes? Do you handle multifamily? If so, up to how many? What is the thing that you like to do? The investor typically already has some idea about what kind of a loan, what kind of a real estate deal, in my example, that they want to do. So if it's single-family houses, just go ask. Hey, do you do non-owner-occupied rental houses? Okay, yes, great. What would you need from me for that? Oh, we need this, this, and this. Great. What else do you need from me? I like to always ask that next question. What else do you need from me? And they'll probably tell you. And then if you'll sit there and you'll come up with some other questions, and sometimes you may not be sure if you can ask them. Just ask it anyway. This is just another person. They sit in a bank with marble floors and all that, and so many people are just nervous and they're scared. And I've never talked to a bank. I can't imagine going in there. I'm shy. I just want to text somebody. No, just go in there and ask them, because they're waiting on you to come in there. There's only so much going out in the community they can do, because they've got to be in there in their office by that desk working on paperwork so their boss can see them. So go in there and talk to them and just start talking about what you want to do, the business you want to do. You already have some idea about what you want to do. And if you don't, get that idea before you walk in there. Go talk to some of your other real estate folks. Join us June the 3rd or June the 5th. Ask others, hey, what is your interest in real estate? And then take notes. Joe here likes to do X, Y, and Z. And then ask the next question. Why do you do that? Why do you like that? And listen. And if that answer resonates with you, keep asking more questions. It sounds like you're onto something. But you need to have a good picture of what you're looking for, and then go ask the banker, this is the kind of business that I do. Does this fit in your wheelhouse? They'll tell you yes or no. Because remember, they want to loan money as bad as you want to borrow it. Go in there and help them out.
Do you ever just straight up ask them what, I don't know quite how to put this, but what does the bank need? Not what does the bank need from me, but like what does the bank need that I might be able to provide in return for us building this relationship around lending?
Well, the bank's going to need some security. I'd be careful about how you ask that if you don't yet have a relationship. That may come across kind of strange. But I think once you've, let's say you're already an account holder, what is the bank looking for right now? Is there a particular product or a particular service? What is it the bank is focused on now? Because each quarter, there will be certain things that are being focused on. It may be they're about to go through a big software upgrade, and they don't really want to do anything new right now. It may be they're about to get rid of all their safe deposit boxes. Okay, well, that's interesting. Why is that? Well, X, Y, and Z is happening. Really? Well, what are you switching to instead? They will be happy to answer questions about their business because not that many people ask them about their business, especially not most customers. Most customers come in and ask for what they want. They just demand this, do it now, and then they go on their way. But if you'll let a banker just be a person with you and be real and you're real with them, I think you'll find it's a very comfortable and very satisfying relationship. Just remember, they need you as badly as you need them.
Yeah, the reason I asked the question is because I was talking to a more of a regional bank now, but it's still pretty small. I mean, I think they have 5, 6, 7 branches, about a home equity loan. And I said, is there anything that, you know, you guys need? And they said deposits.
Oh yeah, they'll tell you that straight up. Yeah, they'll tell you that straight up. And a lot of them do. And you can also tell by their advertising if they're offering high percents on 6-month CDs or high percents on certain types of accounts. Yeah, that's a big giveaway. Most banks always need deposits. So that's, I just took that as a given because they frequently will tell me that. And they want deposits that will stay, not what they call hot money, which is here for a high rate, then they leave in 3 months when the rate's over.
Yeah.
They don't like hot money.
Well, this particular loan person that I was talking to, because the other thing about small banks is, like, they're not siloed the way big banks sometimes are, where the loan department is the loan department. They don't really know what's going on in the investments department or whatever. She offered me a half point reduction in the rate of my HELOC if I would put a certain amount of money in their bank, because they were really looking for deposits.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So it's okay to ask them, as you said, what are the things you're seeking now? What are the particular product services that they're asking for? That they understand that language. If you go in and say, what do you need now? They may not understand the question, especially if you don't have that rapport built, especially them with you. But they understand products and services. Are there any promotions you're doing now? Are there any things that I don't have as a relationship with you that maybe I should? Anything that's just really amazing right now that's new? And I go in and do that every 90 days anyway. That's just second nature for me. I give them the chance to sell me whatever their new thing is. And if they don't have anything, then I'll bring up something. How about unsecured lines of credit? Oh, yeah, we'd love to do some of those. Do you need one? Yeah, well, how much you want? Well, how much can I get? I don't know. Well, shoot me a number, and I'll make up a big number. Sometimes they say yes. And sometimes they give a lesser number, and I still say yes. It's still a good number.
Well, and
but they're running a business just like we are, and they have needs, and they have certain things that they focus on from time to time, just like we do.
That brings me on to my last question, because we've only got about 2 minutes left in the show. You call yourself a professional borrower. What specifically, as a real estate investor, has developing these relationships with these banks done for you?
Well, that is a fabulous question. I think for me, it has, as a beginner, it gave me confidence to do deals. I hear from new people a lot. Still, after all these years, I still hear, man, I'm just not sure. And that's a confidence issue. This has given me the confidence because I know I'll be able to get the money for it. And then if it's a stupid deal, they're going to tell me it's a stupid deal because they don't want to make a stupid loan on a stupid deal. Now where I am, it gives me the confidence to ask a banker for really almost anything, whether it's info on the market, it's on lines of credit that I mentioned, or tell me secrets about your business that people don't know or maybe average people don't ask about. And those are some of the things I like to share. June the 3rd and June the 5th mm-hmm. are from where I sat with a banker. Once I've built that rapport, I've put in the time, whether it's through lunches or in-person meetings, and I've said, what are the things that people don't know that they would be shocked if I told them about the banking industry? So we're going to cover some of those. And I think you all will really like that.
Yes, and we just got a last-minute email from Todd in Atlanta. He says, I attended Robert's presentation on this topic last November, and he shares great actionable information. I highly recommend attending one of these meetings if you can. So, again, that is June 3rd in Columbus at CoreRocks.com. That's where you're going to get your seat reserved. Or June the 5th in Cincinnati at CincinnatiRIA.com. Robert, thank you for taking time out of your vacation to share with us today, and we will see you in Ohio in a couple of weeks.
Thank you, Vina. Thanks, everyone.
You've been listening to Real Life Real Estate Investing. We'll be back next week with more information to put you on the path to financial independence through real estate investing. Until then, happy investing.